Seifert's coming up with huge news on what's happening on the political battlefront on a whole bunch of key subjects. Amazing filmmaker, researcher, author. But first, so this morning I posted Jerome Powell, the head of the Private Federal Reserve, talking about the fact that he just got subpoenaed in criminal subpoenas by the DOJ, probing him for perjury because he did perjure himself before Congress about the Private Federal Reserve renovation that cost billions of dollars. He told bald-faced lies that there are no private apartments, there's no private elevators, there's no marble, there's no gardens on the roof. There is. And obviously Trump is putting pressure on him to cut interest rates. And so when he says this is political, well, you're damn right it's political. You're a crook. We need to abolish the Private Federal Reserve. We need to nationalize it bare minimum. So Grok got asked by listeners when I said the Private Federal Reserve, and Grok said, no, it's not private, which is, of course, not true. It is private, and it's chartered by Congress, but the shareholders of the New York Fed are foreign. And when they first set it up, there was an audit 110 years ago or 112 years ago, and it was found that 80% was owned by European banks, mainly the Rothschilds. So Grok needs to get updated on that and know that. Ron Paul knows that. Jeffrey Griffin knows that. But we need a new audit to show all that. But it really is amazing that people don't know this history. But Grok, again, said that it's a public. Said it's the government. And it's not. Now, there are 12 regional banks that interface with the Treasury and do some Treasury duties. But even those are still private. It is the New York Fed, the governors, that represent the private shareholders. That's why you see the congressional hearings over the years where, well, where'd this half a trillion go? Or where'd this $80 billion go? Where'd this $500 billion go? To foreign banks. And they go, we're not going to tell you because that's a corporate secret. And I've read the books written by the Rothschilds. They're official family biographies. I've watched documentaries on PBS about them. In the last 200 years, they took control of the British Empire, really 1815. They had great power before that, and they would finance both sides of a war. So the idea that they don't have power is just ridiculous. They brag about how they have power. Here's just one clip. I mean, there's hundreds of these on X alone. This is Dom Hannah Rothschild boast about her family's historical influence and power over both governments and kings. Here it is.
This is an extraordinary story. So he was born in a place called the Judengasse, which was a Jewish ghetto, basically. And it was the house that he lived in when he eventually had 13 children was only 14 feet wide. And he lived there with his very, very overpowering and dominant and an incredibly brilliant wife who was called Gutel. He was determined to get out of this ghetto. At nighttime, the ghetto was closed. You weren't allowed to leave. The street was so narrow that no sunlight could penetrate. There was no plumbing. There was no sewage. There was nothing. So everything you can imagine happened.
This is 400 years ago.
And unsurprisingly, he wanted to get out of there. And he started a small coin business, and that did reasonably well. But actually, and this is where it ties into legacy, his great strength was to send his five sons to the capitals of Europe at that time. And what they did is they set up, in effect, the first international banking system. So whereas everyone used to be in separate different countries or separate cities until then, these five boys communicated with each other, sometimes by pidgin, and they wrote to each other in Judendeutsche, which was a kind of Yiddish-German vernacular. And that is why they were so successful. And this absolute belief in togetherness, you've got to stand together, you've got to work together, you've got to work across borders, you've got to work with rules. And by 1789, when the last one went, to 1815, so a very, very short period of time, it was said that no government or king would consider going to war without the Rothschilds supporting them, because that was how incredibly influential and powerful they had become.
Notice you talked about carrier pigeon at the Battle of Waterloo. They had the carrier pigeons get to the coast, go back and say that Napoleon had won to crash the market 98%. That's how they took over the British Empire, through fraud. We'll be right back. So take that, Grok. There's the facts. That's the Federal Reserve owned by them. We'll be right back.
traditions, pure delight. Optimal human beef tallow treats meals just right. Cook strong at high heat with a taste so bright. So get yourself to the Alex Jones store. Support the crew and the InfoWar.
Wake up, folks! Spread this message. The globalist machine is tightening the chains, and they're after your freedoms.
The Podesta plan is in operation.
Don't worry, it's safe and effective.
Don't you just love my GMO potatoes?
Ladies and gentlemen, the truth is unfolding before our very eyes. We must question everything.
Waging war on corruption. It's Alex Jones, coming to you live from the front lines of the InfoWar.
Well, he's an amazing filmmaker, but a major game changer in U.S. elections for a long time, and author, investigative journalist, Joel Gilbert. And he's got Highway61ENT.com, Joel S. Gilbert on X. I wanted to get his 35,000-foot view on 1 year into the Trump administration, a little shy of that, on the 20th. In just 8 days, wow. The good Trump's doing, the bad, what he would change. I know he's got his ear to the ground. A lot of his research was instrumental in getting Letitia James indicted. Now they've shot that down for now. Where that's going, also Swalwell, the known communist Chinese agent, is running for governor out in California. And so Gilbert just went and talked to him. I got kicked out of his event. We've got so much to talk about with Joel Gilbert. And we're also going to look at a bunch of other key information on a bunch of fronts he sent me. But just up front, I'd like to know, how is it going with Soros and the Democrats and this whole hoax that this officer murdered this woman in cold blood? When we have the footage from in front where she clearly hits him. The corporate media will not show that video. They just keep saying that ICE are terrorists and that they're doing illegal things, which they're not. And they're really trying to get riots going nationwide, what I call the Podesta plan. A, what's your take on that? How successful has it been? What do you expect them to do next? And what should the Trump administration be doing? Because on J6, we saw hundreds and hundreds of people that were just waved in by the police in velvet robes, thrown in jail for years, in some cases without trials. They knew right where they were. They grabbed them. In this case, we have all these Democrats, including mayors and people, and saying, get guns, Second Amendment, go after ICE, kill them, they're Nazis. That's clearly not free speech. That's, you know, calls to action, terroristic threats. And we're not seeing anything from the Justice Department, so I'm really concerned. I know you are a big source for the good people of the Justice Department who start the investigations and the indictments, then it gets killed. So thanks for being here, Joel Gilbert.
Good to be back, Alex. Look, as you appropriately named your show years ago, we're still in the info war. Because the Democrats are replaying this whole narrative like they did with Trayvon Martin. Trayvon was just getting candy for his brother. Same thing they did with George Floyd. He was just trying to buy some food, you know. Same thing they're doing with this gal who weaponized her SUV to obstruct law enforcement and tried to run someone over. So it's the same info war. I think the public is pretty aware now of the narratives the Democrats put forward. They're aware that the media won't cover things that are not favorable to the Democrat narratives. So we're kind of in the middle of it. I think we are going to win this one because the woman's reputation, her history, it's all coming out. There's plenty of video. I think they're not going to persevere this time, though they have in the past to a great extent, just by covering a narrative that they wanted to promote.
Well, you're absolutely right that it all fell apart really the first day, but now they've doubled down and just keep saying, ICE is illegal. You're not allowed to be here. We're going to arrest you, whether it's in Pennsylvania, whether it's in Minnesota, whether it's in Washington State. I mean, they're attempting to get ICE killed, telling the public that they're illegal, that they're Nazis. That's terroristic.
Well, the Democrat politicians are 100% in on it. I just attended a town hall meeting of Eric Swalwell, who's running for governor of California, in Santa Monica High School this past Friday night. And the things he said about ICE were just outrageous. He was introduced by his staffer, who was wearing a T-shirt that said, "I like crushed ice." Then Swalwell said, it's just like Anne Frank invoking the Holocaust. He said, ICE agents are dragging women by their hair through the streets. He said, when I'm governor, I'm going to take away their immunity. I'm going to arrest ICE agents. So the Democrats, are all in on this idea of villainizing law enforcement. Swalwell, interestingly, said that he came from a family of Republicans, that his brothers and his father are police officers. And he admitted, he said, the reason I became a Democrat was to antagonize my parents. So he's going through some kind of psychological rebellion in his adult life to try to become governor to get back at his parents. So I wrote an article in the Gateway Pundit about it today, and I said that, like all tyrants in history that cause mayhem and destruction and murder, Swalwell has all the ingredients to become one of those guys, because he's absolutely trying to incite the public to, and they know that certain individuals that are unbalanced or transgender will take up arms when they say these kind of things.
Yeah, I want to play this video with audio here in a moment of you being let out for simply asking questions politely, but here's the article. Eric Swalwell is a wannabe tyrant. Gateway Pundit reporter Joel Gilbert thrown out at the end of Swallowsville's town hall event. Go ahead and roll that short video clip, guys. Go ahead and roll it.
Now keep that hand up. If this, you put up your left hand, it's in the most trouble you've ever seen in your life.
So these two goons come up and surround me and say, what's your plan? And I said, well, I was going to take a picture with a congressman. They said, we're not going to allow that. And I said, well, then, you know, what do I do? They said, well, you had to leave. So I went, they kicked me out of the event. I didn't say anything. I didn't do anything. Never even asked a question. So Swalwell has all the tyrannical characteristics. He's a Bernie Sanders wannabe. He wants the public health care and the open borders. He's absolutely a Bernie Sanders clone.
Now, it looks like this was a public place that, and people were invited there, and you didn't even talk, but you were very polite when he walked over and shook your hand, and I guess they just said, oh my God, that's that guy that's a Republican. I guess you're just not allowed to be there.
That's apparently what happened, because I never said a word. I never got to ask a question. I think Swalwell recognized me when he came around to shake hands. I could see the look in his eyes, and that's why they cut short a two-hour town hall on a Friday afternoon. It's not easy to get to Santa Monica to a public event with all the traffic, and he only did 30 minutes of questions, and he just ended it. So it could have been they were afraid I would ask a question, because I've done a lot of research on the fact that Swalwell is not eligible to run for governor. He made his principal residence on his mortgage in Washington, D.C. He told the bank it's his principal residence, and he has no address in California.
But absolutely, when he looks in your eyes, he looks like a deer in the headlights. Obviously, he knows you, and obviously, he knows about your article breaking the fact that he was engaged in mortgage fraud. So start over. That's important.
Yeah, what I researched is the fact that the California Constitution requires anyone running for governor to live in California for 5 years before the election. Now, Swalwell has no address in California. He only has a home in Washington, D.C. that he declared as his primary residence in his mortgage. So when he filled out the forms to run for governor of California, he actually used his attorney's office address as his home address, which is illegal. It's perjury. So I'm saying that Swalwell cannot run for governor of California. I've written a number of articles. He got referred to the Department of Justice by Bill Pulte at the Federal Housing Authority because of a potential mortgage fraud. So Swalwell is in trouble, and I think he must have recognized me and was afraid I'd ask him the question and embarrass him, because he'd have to answer. I was going to ask him, what is your address in California if you have one, and if you don't have one, will you drop out of the race right now? That's what I was going to ask him. But apparently they identified me. Swalwell identified me. They cut short the two-hour event to only 30 minutes. And when I tried to get in the photo line to take a photo with him and I was going to ask him the question, they threw these three guys over to escort me out. So Swalwell, I think, is afraid. He's on the run. He's an attorney. He should know the law. He used to be a prosecutor. And he's absolutely disrespecting the law by running for office without a legitimate California address, which he would have been required to have for 5 years. I'll give you an example contrasting him. Maxine Waters, who is not our favorite congresswoman, but she actually owns a home in Los Angeles. And on her condo in Washington, D.C., on her mortgage, it says that it would be her second home. So she pays higher interest rates than Swalwell, because if it's your primary residence, you get the lowest rates possible. So Maxine Waters told the bank it was her second home, and she owns a home in California. So Maxine Waters could run for governor of California. But Swalwell does not have any home in California and named his D.C. home as his primary residence. So I'm expecting, and I'm going to keep working on getting him disqualified and getting the Secretary of State of California to disqualify him. And I think they were terrified when they saw me at this event, made sure they cut it short, and made sure I left.
Well, there's 2 points I want to hit on this so we get to other big subjects you've got. What do you make of the field out there that this is the best they've got to replace Newsom? All the skeletons in his closet, the Chinese girlfriend, you know, the Chinese communist agent confirmed, Fang Fang. You got that. And then notice he says, you know, raise your hands if California's in a lot of trouble. Raise your other hand if it's in the worst trouble ever. They're the ones running it. Here he is saying, I'll fix it. I'll make it better. Just wild. And I also think they shut it down early because they figured there might have been some other people there they didn't recognize. And that shows how scared he is of a question. It shows he's a paper tiger.
Yeah, look, California is unfortunately a one-party state like New York. So Swalwell knows if he can get the nomination for governor for the Democrats, that he'll be governor. And he's chosen the path of radicalism and anti-Trumpism. That's all he talks about. He says these radical, ridiculous things he said, I won't fund the border patrol. I won't fund ICE. ICE are dragging people through the streets. He says this off-the-wall stuff.
Oh, but unfortunately, he's going to prosecute ICE.
He's going to prosecute ICE. He said he's introduced legislation to strip them of their immunity. So Swalwell has these tyrannical ideas, but unfortunately, most people in California don't care about his transgressions. He had a Chinese spy relationship for several years who raised money for him. He got kicked off the Intelligence Committee. So many strange things about his behavior. Even I have publicized things, even about his divorce from his first marriage, where he fought over can openers and napkin rings. I looked at his finances. Swalwell has been in Congress making $174,000 a year for 13 years. He has not paid down his student debts. He still owes $100,000 for student loans. He hasn't paid down his credit cards. He still owes $100,000 to American Express and Chase Bank. He cashed out his pension, which is a big red flag. So he's got serious financial issues. We don't know where all his money is going. And he's running for governor to run the state with a $500 billion budget. Most Democrat voters don't care about that stuff. Swalwell thinks he can, you know, get out there and do town halls. It's way early. It's January. People don't pay attention till maybe June to a governor's race, even August. So I think he thinks he can be governor by name recognition and by being anti-Trump.
No, I agree. But, I mean, I'm seeing Democrat candidates for local office now, like the Somali that doesn't, you know, has no degree, doesn't even have a driver's license, is caught in a giant fraud scam, so they put him on the city council. Or you've got AOC that, you know, was a bartender and then suddenly had no money and now is worth, you know, whatever it is, giant millions amounts. It's the same thing with Ilhan Omar. It seems like Democrats like people that have really horrible records and are really corrupt. I mean, it seems for them that that's a pleasing prerequisite.
Well, look what came out of California. Kamala Harris was a terrible district attorney in San Francisco. She was a terrible district attorney of the state of California. She was arresting these black mothers because their kids were in the hospital. I told the story of Sheree Peoples, how she was arrested and tried by Kamala Harris because her daughter was in the hospital. She didn't go to school because she was sick. So Kamala Harris was a terrible politician. But they made her senator, and then they made her vice president. So California and New York have just very low standards when there's no competition from Republicans. It's hard to even find a Republican to even want to bother to run because they know they have no chance to win. So you get a very low-level, low-quality candidate on the Democrat side, and the Democrats have decided the more radical they are, the more it'll appeal to their radical, most activist base that'll come out and vote in the primary. And that's the strategy that I think Eric Swalwell is pursuing. Radical policies, anti-Trumpism, he thinks is the ticket to the nomination, which is then an automatic ticket to the governorship. And I'm certain that Swalwell will run for president again. That's his plan.
Well, I'm not saying it just to dunk on him. I mean, I've watched him do interviews. I've watched him closely. He seems really stupid.
I would have to agree. Look, I was sitting right across from him. He was speaking for about 40 minutes, and all he does is talk in little cliches. He tells these silly stories. When he answered questions, he was, you know, trying to act like he was paying attention. I think he's a very low IQ individual, and sometimes those can be the most dangerous because they get propped up, they repeat the same things, and he's got nothing but ambition. And as I said, he even admitted, he told the crowd, I became a Democrat to antagonize my parents. I think he's got some real big, deep psychological problem that he wants to punish his parents by being this radical left politician.
I want to get into Trump and the midterms and basically your feel for what's going on, what you're hearing about upcoming indictments, because I can tell you with my listeners, even bigger than the economy, they want justice because they know the deep state is just going to come back in later and continue destroying the country. They're not dismantled. What's the intel you've got? Because you were instrumental in your Letitia James research, getting her indicted. Obviously, if she doesn't go to jail, you're a major target down the road. You've been instrumental in exposing Adam Schiff, instrumental in exposing all these people, as you've done for many years. And certainly, we know that they're really coming after us in 3 years if they haven't been themselves put in prison. They're the totalitarians. They're the ones that launched all this. For me, it's not about vengeance. It's about survival. We need justice. And if Trump wants to win the midterms and gain seats, that to me is the number one issue. What do you think?
It's a huge issue for Republican voters. Trump's biggest mistake in his first term was his failure to take control of the Department of Justice. He's not a lawyer, so maybe he didn't understand how important it was. For his second term, he appointed Pam Bondi, and I was critical of her from the get-go because it was Pam Bondi was the Attorney General of Florida when the state of Florida arrested George Zimmerman. Even though he'd been exonerated by the local police, Crump and Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton put on all these street mobs, and Pam Bondi showed she had no backbone. She caved into the mob and appointed a special counsel to arrest Zimmerman. She said she was friends with Trayvon Martin's parents. She was friends with Ben Crump. So she really caved in, and it was really because of her that Black Lives Matter got started as a result of Zimmerman being acquitted. So I didn't think she was the right choice. You saw back in September, Trump was tweeting to Pam Bondi saying, Pam, please arrest somebody, please. And he had to appoint his own special prosecutor in Virginia to prosecute Letitia James, and then that was overturned. So, look, Trump promised to drain the swamp again, but his way to drain the swamp of the Department of Justice, instead of firing everybody and starting over, he chose just to replace the few people at the top. Unfortunately, there's 115,000 employees of the Department of Justice, and even if Pam Bondi was doing a good job, it would be difficult for her to get these people prosecuted. So it remains here a year into the Trump administration. There's been no prosecutions of the deep state, Letitia James, Russia hoax, nothing. So that is going to be a big problem. And I think Republican voters in the fall are going to remember that if nothing happens.
Well, paradoxically, Trump's doing so good on so many other fronts. It would take hours, even chronicle. Maybe you could spend some time on what you think the good things are. But it is still very frustrating because I know people that are in the cabinet meetings where Trump's yelling at people saying, I want indictments. He even comes out in the news. There's been hot mics catching him doing it. And I know the people in the meetings, he's pissed. He understands it. Well, then why doesn't he get rid of Bondi, get rid of Todd Blanche? Okay. Ed Martin was investigating just the Democrats openly running lawsuits against me, the DOJ funding it. We had him red-handed, had him, you know, using COVID money, all of it. And it was Martin's idea to go after him. And then Blanche kills it and then says, I'm a fringe person to ABC News and don't deserve to be protected. I mean, why he had to, like, rub it in? And so it's like, Trump, there's your litmus test. I mean, like, you know, and we know that Blanche sits on top of all these other investigations. And TikTok, Trump, TikTok. Joel, your take on that?
Look, I agree with you 100%. Trump is frustrated. He wants this stuff done. But I think he is hesitant to replace cabinet members for other reasons. I think he's afraid of being accused of having a chaotic administration or things
exactly.
Are out of
He's
control.
Scared. It makes him look weak and they could turn against him and people. Yeah. Hey, but I agree. But we've got to get it through to him and the public to get it through to him that the existential threat is these indictments. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's something that I've been thinking about every day. I uncovered all this 43 years of mortgage fraud by Letitia James and all these other crimes, Adam Schiff, you name it, and nothing happens. If it was a Republican that sneezed, they'd be in jail already. So it's something that Trump still has to fulfill. As you say, he's done incredible things on just about every other level. But when it comes to taking control of the Department of Justice, he has not fulfilled the same level of promises that he said he would do if reelected. So all we can do is keep standing by and hope it comes through. But as you say, there's a lot of other things that are distracting him, and there's only so much he can do on his own.
Well, all I know is 3 weeks after he was in office, I get sent the documents from the DOJ with the FBI spying on me since Obama and Comey National Security Investigations. We have all the other documents. And again, it's not about me. It's like even in my case, it's all totally illegal, massive harassment. They're doing it to so many other people. And I'm literally sitting here waiting for the Death Star to orbit in 3 years, be clear to fire on me. And you know they're coming after you, Joel. And I mean, so we've put our lives on the line here. And I could get a hold of Trump and he'll say nice things. Or I've been invited to Mar-a-Lago, you know, for an award or whatever. I didn't go just because, okay, comes out 5 minutes, pat you on the head. That's it. You know, I got to fight with General Flynn and that thing. No, I know what Trump listens to. I may just have to do a demonstration and maybe get a few thousand people outside the White House and bullhorn a day he's there and just scream and yell about it because it's that type of stuff gets his attention. Joel, do you have any other ideas how we can light a fire under Trump's ass?
If you look at his Truth Social, he's all over this subject. He is posting my articles on Letitia James. He's posting, you know, this kind of stuff every other day. But somehow there's some disconnect. He's not getting the DOJ to execute what he wants done. And it's partially his fault for appointing Todd Blanche and Pam Bondi and not someone who would go over there and kick ass. So it's just up to the president to make a change. I don't know what he's waiting for, but he is waiting. We got the midterms coming up. And, honestly, there's going to have to be a Republican, J.D. Vance or whoever it is going to have to win in 28, because if it's a Democrat, they'll do like Joe Biden did on the first day. They'll sign 200 executive orders and they'll say America is back and they'll reverse everything Trump ever did. So
stay
there's
right
a
there.
Lot of work.
Yeah, they're going to get rid of the filibuster. They're going to pack the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
America has to strike now. This is literally do or die. The country's gone if we don't do this. Joel Gilbert, stay there. We'll be right back. The problem is, this is when the globals can knock the power up and blame the Russians or whoever. They've already pre-programmed that. This is when they could set off a TAC nuke, try to shoot down Air Force One with surface-to-air missiles, blame Iran. This is the globalist color revolution that they've done hundreds of times around the world, hundreds since 1947. Operation Ajax, Operation Gladio, the list goes on and on. I just keep saying, danger, danger, mortal danger to the country. Mortal danger to your future. I mean, I can physically feel the anxiety and electricity shooting up and down my body and the palpable, not fear, because that's not the feeling I feel, the feeling of ready to fight. And I'm fighting in the information war. I have electricity feeling in my teeth right now. I have to make myself not bare my teeth and bug my eyes out right now as I address you because that's what I feel like. Feel right now. People want to conquer us.
war, but I understand it's informational. So that's where I am right now. But I just showed you who I am. That's what I feel like every second right now. That's the urgency. Fauci and Gates and Schumer and Newsom want to destroy our future. Who want us to live in bondage? Who want to cut our children's penises off? You Satanist! I'm just telling you, I've never felt so much urgency. My spider sense has never even close to this much on fire. Ugh. My cells tell me I'm in a war, and to gird myself for it, and to guard myself for truth, because we are up against the scum of the earth that will give us no quarter. This is an endless war, a fight between good and evil. And in this cycle, good is rising, and good is winning, and evil can feel it in its bones. And it is rising to the challenge.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
Now, back to our program.
Are you tired of stubborn fat that just won't budge no matter how hard you diet? Well, let me introduce you to Ultimate Burn, the most powerful science-backed fat-torching formula available today. Inside every capsule of Ultimate Burn is 200 milligrams of GlucoVantage dihydroberberine, a supercharged form of berberine that clinical studies show slashes insulin resistance, blocks new fat storage, and helps your body burn fat for fuel. Then we crank the heat with a massive 120 milligrams of Calorie Burn GP Grains of Paradise, packing a full 15 milligrams of active 6-paradol. Human trials prove it fires up your brown fat, ramping your daily calorie burn by up to 200 extra calories a day. Then we finish it with cinnamon, polyphenols, and bioparin to make sure every milligram hits your system hard. The result is faster fat loss, smaller waist, better blood sugar, and energy that lasts all day. Ignite your results with the real deal. Grab Ultimate Burn now and watch your body finally start burning fat like it's supposed to. Stock is limited. Get yours before it's gone. It's Ultimate Burn. Light the fire at thealexjonesstore.com.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Rallying patriots worldwide in defense of human liberty, it's Alex Jones.
Michael Savage is coming up here in about 27 minutes from now. He's got a lot of huge issues to talk about, including all the aluminum that's in the environment, what it's doing to our brains. But Joel Gilbert, amazing documentary filmmaker, investigative journalist, is here, so instrumental in getting those indictments against the deep staters that have now been manipulated by the corrupt courts and thrown out. I wanted you to give your expert take on what we're facing if the Democrats are able to steal or win the midterms, and then what happens in 3 years in the general election and the sense of urgency people need. But I want to shift gears out of that into geopolitics. So much is happening now with Venezuela, with Iran, with Greenland, with what's happening in Ukraine, with China and Taiwan. We're entering that phase of the fourth turning and really an acceleration of trends. And I say thank God Trump's in, because he's masterfully navigating that area so well. And that's why I look at what he's doing with the Justice Department. And I tend to think he's made some deal or something. The whole thing doesn't smell good, but... Regardless, you know, he's got to know they're going to come after him if they're able to, you know, really get back in power. So I'm kind of going back to where we were before, just because of the existential threat we're dealing with here, Joel.
Yeah, well, first of all, as we speak, the margins in the House of Representatives are very, very thin. I think a Republican representative recently died, leaving only about a 2-vote margin. So there is a danger that somehow between now and the fall, if a couple other Republicans were to die, or someone resigned to take a job as a lobbyist somewhere, then you could see Hakeem Jeffries could become speaker. The margins are that thin. So there's a lot to worry about even until the midterms. As far as the midterms, if the Democrats were to win, there's no question that everything would come to a halt. No more legislation, no more investigations, committees. The committees would be weaponized by Democrats. Even Eric Swalwell has been bragging about, we're going to win the midterms and we're going to drag, Holman's ass. You know, he likes to use the ass word. He uses the S word. He uses the F word a lot. Democrats do that a lot lately. And they're going to simply weaponize the committees. And I have no doubt they're also going to impeach Trump. So the stakes are very, very high that I think the Republicans have to win the midterms. I think Trump is counting on an economic boom to come in sometime in the spring and certainly by the summer, because when they replace Jerome Powell at the Fed, they'll be able to lower interest rates, which will give the whole housing market a huge shot in the arm. So I think that's what they're relying on, is a big economic recovery, all this foreign investment. He's accumulated, I don't know, $10 trillion, $20 trillion worth of foreign investment. It's going to start hitting. So I think that's the strategy, is a huge economic boom in the spring and summer to bring us into the midterms. And I think Trump
Joel,
is...
Joel, let me just say, I 100% agree with you. That's why I said earlier, we need that. It's great. I agree. I think Bissett's right. We'll really start seeing it kick in second half of next year, right before the midterms. And it's starting to work. But I'm telling you, he'll gain 10 points if Hillary got indicted or something. I mean, people, I'm trying to explain to the White House, they really want justice. I know that Mark Mitchell, one of the best pollsters in the world, has explained that to them at the White House, to the president. Like, people want justice even more than money. And I get Trump's a businessman, so he's focused on that. He needs to get more focused on it. And I know I'm harping on it.
Well, look, here's where we're stuck on that is Trump, instead of firing everybody or half of everybody, the DOJ, he decided to drain the swamp. He would only appoint a few people at the top to change everything. Those few people are a little bit squishy and wishy-washy, and they're not hardcore MAGA. Certainly Pam Bondi, who's responsible for Black Lives Matter and for persecuting George Zimmerman in Florida, even though he was innocent, was not a good choice. So we're stuck with Trump agrees with everything we're saying right now. If he was watching right now, he'd be posting about what we're saying. But he does not want to change or fire Pam Bondi and Todd Blanche for whatever reason. So this is why we're stuck on that issue, and I don't see it changing until Trump decides he's had enough.
Let's raise this wild card. Notice we don't hear about Epstein anymore, because all the family files, 90-something thousand of them, all the court files, Trump asking the courts to release the grand juries, the Democrats trying to block the grand juries. But as the stuff comes out, none of it's bad about Trump. All of it's bad on the Democrats. And the Clintons are trying to block not going to Congress. Why was Trump then squeamish about releasing all this when he knows damn well he's not in there? Well, we know why. He said it would embarrass a lot of innocent people. That's what he said on Truth Social about a month ago. He said, well, a lot of innocent people in there, but since the Democrats did this, screw it, release it all. I think he made a mistake in just not up front saying release it all.
Well, here's the thing. Trump does two-hour press conferences every day. He dominates the media every day. There's no air. There's no oxygen. No Democrat can even get on the air or say anything because Trump is so dominant. So the reason they chose the Epstein issue is because it's a little bit salacious and a little bit mysterious, and they think they can kind of all use it to bludgeon Trump with. So Trump understood this is the only issue they had that the media would cover, in contrast to him dominating the news every day. So I think that's why he resisted it. He knew it was just a lot of nonsense, and it kind of didn't go away, so he thought the best way to get rid of it would be to release everything, which was the right thing to do. But I don't blame him for not jumping on board to the whole hoax to begin with, because it was just an effort by the Democrats to get some airtime, and they did achieve it for quite some time, and I think Trump finally put an end to it.
No, I totally agree with you that what they left in the files, the way they were bringing it out, was a hoax. Not that Epstein didn't do stuff, not that the Clintons weren't involved, not that Bill Gates wasn't there, but Trump was saying it's the new Russiagate, like he said 10 months ago. They want to hang around my neck. He should have been specific and said the way they're deploying it is against me, which is a hoax, which later he did say word for word repeatedly and people got it. And so I think now the Democrats have kind of gone, ooh, and they're wishing they never would have brought it out. Because, I mean, what were they thinking when they all know they're in it? They all know it's all them. Then why would they still play that game? That's crazy.
Well, I think they thought they could bludgeon Trump with it for a certain amount of time. And then whenever they got nailed, they just move on to the next subject. They've moved on to this, you know, Renee Goodwoman. There'll always be something that they can jump on and change the narrative with their media allies who are very powerful. And
that's
and
right. There's always the next thing. There's always the next thing.
Correct. Correct. So that's what they're doing with the whole Renee Good thing. We're fighting it now, and don't think that they don't have a couple other issues that they're already thinking what they're going to do next. They're always onto something, and I'm sure they're hoping that somebody else will be killed by ICE. Someone else will attack ICE. I'm sure they hope it's a minority instead of a white female, and they can really ramp up the riots. So that's all they do is they create these narratives because they don't have legitimate issues. They don't have things that voters will actually vote for or care about. So all they can do is this hysteria. But Trump is dominating the news and dominating the news cycle every day. And he's up against this whole series of hoaxes, which he's been for many years.
Absolutely. There was quite a list of them. Russiagate, Ukrainegate. There were so many other things they put out that just got put by the wayside.
Yeah, they come and go. They come up with other ones every day. They try certain things. If they don't fly, they come up with something else. Right now they started, Swalwell, when I was at his town hall the other night, he was complaining about Greenland and Venezuela and talking about how Americans' priorities are, you know, our economics, and we don't care about this kind of stuff, and he's a king and he's a tyrant. So they'll try all kind of things. It's all a substitute for not having actual policies that do anything for anybody. But that's been their playbook against Trump.
Well, it certainly is night and day. Trump is doing everything he can to help the average American and the average business person and the average mom and pop. I mean, just the deal with not letting big brokerage firms and institutional investors buy single family dwellings. I mean, that is just going to explode things right there alone. So many things like that. Starting the process of breaking up the monopoly of the meat packers, the oligopoly. That's a real move. He's just going down the line. Now, shifting gears in international, here's a clip I want to play. This is from a couple nights ago. Anti-Khomeini Iranians, and they're Persians, folks. They don't want Islam running it. They don't want a king running it. You know, there's different factions, but anti-Khomeini Iranians are clashing with pro-Hamas white liberal women in Washington. So this is happening in D.C., New York, they're fighting out in California. You've seen the fights. A guy's got something on the side of a truck they don't like. They get in the truck. They start beating him up. He's another Iranian. He's saying no kings and no mullahs. And then they say he's an Islamicist that attacked. No, they pull him out and start beating him up. So I think that's emblematic of the infighting within the Iranian opposition about what the future will be. And that, of course, would happen anywhere. You're always going to have factions. But just think about the bizarreness of liberal women and LGBT and the trans groups literally out there, trans for Islam, trans for Palestinians. And then now I see a lot of people online, not just liberals, but ultra right wingers and obsessed on Israel all day, literally saying we support the mullahs, we support the Ayatollah, because Israel doesn't support the Ayatollah. I've seen the different polls, something like 80% of the Iranians want to get rid of the regime. It's a terrible thing. And then there's actual people on the left that hate Israel so much that just because the mullahs are anti-Israel, they're not going to support a literal dictatorship that executes people that peacefully protest. And it's so sick. And of course, for all you Israel haters, you already see the Iranians all fighting with each other over who's going to be in charge if the country does fall. I mean, if the dictatorship does fall. So that shows it's not some monolithic thing. It's the people that want freedom. And so to see the left literally in unison defending the mullah's dictatorship, all because they have a hard-on for Israel, is a sick joke.
Yeah, look, let me give you the big picture here. Radical leftists and communists have always had a lot in common with Islamists, because both Islamists and communists view Western free markets, Western democracy, as an obstacle to taking power. And both Islamists and communists want to destroy free market system. They want to destroy democracy so they can take power. So they both view Western capitalism as an obstacle. And that's why they're united. That's why American leftists and communists, they hate to see Islamists, removed from power, because those are their brothers in the fight against Western democracy. That's always been that way, even since the days of the Soviet Union, and that's why they've worked together, and that's why they have the same aspirations. So that's why you see, Barack Obama is the one that opened up America to massive Islamic immigration during his term. He changed all the rules to make sure we brought in Somalis and Egyptians and so many Islamic communities. It all started there. And that's why we have Ilhan Omar, and we have Zohran Mamdani and these other guys now seeking power. And they align themselves with socialism and communism because they have the same goal, which is to destroy free markets, destroy capitalism, and destroy democracy.
Well, we need an alliance to not just be Christians or conservatives or nationalists or people that just aren't suicidal, common sense coalition, like Kennedy calls it, we're just a common sense party. What do we call the West coming together to block the red-green alliance? Because people need an urgency to understand this is a public alliance, whether you're in Australia or Europe or the UK or here or anywhere in the world, the red-green alliance is all concerted, working hand in glove together.
Well, the landscape is not good. Australia has a radical far-left Labour government. They have the same in the UK. Many European governments are leftist, not all. But it's hard to get a united Western front when half of your best allies are far left and believe in this idea of DEI and inclusivity, and they don't really understand the big picture of what it means to bring large populations of Muslims into your country, and not understanding that they have a different way of life, a different political goal, and a different value system than your society does. So we've got Trump, we've got Orban in Hungary, of course, Netanyahu, we've got only a few. Believe it or not, Putin is actually on board with this agenda, as are the people in Poland. So there should form an alliance at some point, but it's something that Trump is putting a lot of pressure to kind of bring together. I think getting rid of Maduro was a step in the right direction. Cuba is under pressure now from Trump, and now Iran is at great risk because of the developments the last couple of weeks. It remains to be seen what's going to happen. Remember in the days of Obama, they had these big protests, and Obama said, I'm staying out of it. Trump made the correct call saying that, well, no, we do support the protests. It remains to be seen if there'll be anything beyond the moral support.
Let's play a clip of what I mentioned in Washington. This is pro-Iran regime change, folks. And then they're getting in fights with the liberal women that love Hamas and Hezbollah. Here it is.
Iranian people peacefully having a protest. And this Democrats tend to show up and turn up anti-ICE.
Man, you talk about a Tower of Babel. You've got all the leftists out there thinking because Iran, again, is fighting Israel, that everybody must be want to blow up Israel. That's not even true. And then you've got all these different factions of Iranians fighting over people that don't want a royalist, people that don't want to. What do you think with the different factions would be ideal for the Iranian people, or what do you expect end up happening with Iran, and what's the timetable? Because it's been holding on since 1979, 1980, but I don't see it holding on much longer, or Cuba since 1958.
Yeah, look, not many people understand what the Iranian population consists of. It actually consists of many, many different ethnic groups, Kurds, Arabs, Persians, different even language groups, So they were kind of united under this, under the Shah for many, many years in Iran. But they're not a, a group of homogeneous people that all, you know, believe in this kind of unity. So with the economy in free fall, I think it's like a million of their, or a billion of their currency is one U.S. dollar. The whole economy has collapsed. So I think that's been the trigger that has ignited all these different groups to kind of unite with one goal, which is let's get rid of this Islamic regime because it's not serving us. They're chanting, you know, why are you spending all our money in Gaza and Lebanon when our country's falling apart? So what's striking to me that is the invasion by Hamas of Israel in 23, I think in the end will trigger the collapse of Hamas, the collapse of Hezbollah, and the end of the Iranian regime. It's just incredible what that started. And I think it's my prediction that I think within a couple of weeks we'll see the end of the Iranian regime if everything continues like it's going right now.
I agree with you, but do you think the mullahs will be smart? The mullahs will be smart, the Ayatollah, just run to Russia? Or will they try some last-ditch Hail Mary and fire a bunch of their weapons at Israel?
I think that they're more inclined to leave. They understand that the Israeli response and the American response would be so devastating that they might not personally survive. So I don't think, it's my analysis, they will not attack Israel as a distraction for their population at all. And I think they're more inclined to take off rather than try to start a war.
Well, you notice that they've been shooting people since day one. Now they're saying it's about 700, they estimate, are dead. And I've got lots of videos of the Iranian military shooting innocent people. Trump has said he would take action. Do you think Trump's going to attack some government sites? And would that actually prop the government up?
I think when Trump made clear that if Iran killed protesters, they'd have to pay a very big price, I think that Trump does not want to make an empty threat. He doesn't want to be known for making empty threats. He's made a career in this term especially of backing up everything he said he would do, especially internationally. So I expect him to do something, whether they attack a few military sites or attack some the houses of some of these rulers in Tehran. I think he's going to do something. I think he does not believe he can afford not to back up his threats with actual actions. So I expect something to happen literally in the next few days, is based on what I understand about Trump not wanting to back down from the red line that he created.
Well, people can say what they want about Trump. He's done everything he said he would do, or he's tried. He always said he was going to end the big wars, but also re-exert American power where we could have pinpoint stuff, really have catalysts for change. But the old international order is coming to an end. Even before Trump got in, it was going to happen. So if we don't come in and exert our power, and then we will have power exerted on us. So I'm not for nation building. I'm not for globalism. It's the opposite. But we're returning to the Monroe Doctrine. We're returning really to what Teddy Roosevelt did, expanding on that. And so if we don't do that, we will have China in our backyard. We will have Cuba through Mexico. And if Trump can get reform in Venezuela and get Cuba liberated and all this, it's going to be legendary. I mean, this is a big deal, and it looks like we're pretty close.
Yeah, I think Trump is committed to ending the reign of rogue states, terror states, narco states. He sees the opportunity. They have very little support. They used to rely on support from Russia. Because of the war in Ukraine, Russia can't support anybody. He's exerted the Donroe Doctrine. Cuba's in the crosshairs. So I think Trump is very interested and very proud of his ability to affect the international scene, and he sees the opportunity to eliminate rogue regimes and all the suffering they create for their own people and all the terror and drugs they export to the United States. So I think this remains his policy, and Cuba and Iran are now in the crosshairs.
Joel, briefly tell people about your books and films and all the work you're doing.
Well, you know, I'm pretty well known for this one, Alex. Don't forget, you helped me advertise this way back in 2012, Dreams for My Real Father.
Powerful.
About Obama's real father, Frank Marshall Davis. You helped me launch that way back in 2012. My newest film, go to RoseanneIsAmerica.com, all about Roseanne Barr, her life story, and you can link up where to watch it online. She was the first victim of cancel culture because she was a Trump supporter. You can read, watch that whole film. She's a fantastic actress, and she's making a big comeback with a new show. And I've got films about the Middle East, Farewell Israel, Atomic Jihad, about the Iranian nuclear program. All my films, Highway61ENT.com for entertainment, Highway61ENT.com. I'm on Twitter, Joel S. Gilbert on Twitter, and I'm writing a lot in the Gateway Pundit. You can read all my articles. I'm doing a lot of coverage on Eric Swalwell right now.
All right, great job, Joel. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
All right, Michael Savage is coming up. If you just joined us, my voice is terrible. I'm not sick. I have, like, laryngitis, all the pollen in the air. I woke up this morning and barely talked, but it's not painful, so I know it's painful to listen to, so I apologize, but that's just what you're stuck with. But Michael Savage is coming up. We're going to cover the waterfront with him, his new book, Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's, looking at aluminum in the brain, and so much more. That's just part of what the interview is going to be about. So that's about to happen. Please remember, I'm listener supported. We have a new limited edition World War II, but modernized standard trench dagger, trench battle knife. And it's 10 inches long, double-edged, razor sharp, highest quality steel, stainless steel, with the brass knuckles murdered out black, the skull crusher. It's all there. Life is fiery with its beauty from my famous rant and a World War II style brunette wearing the InfoWars outfit right there for you. A real piece of history, only 2,000 of them, and it funds this operation. I want to thank those of you that have supported us in the past. I want to encourage those of you that have it to take action. But really what you want is the ultramethylene blue, the Shilajit, the Irish Sea Moss, the Bovine Colostrum, another great game-changing products at thealexshowstore.com. And Friday's the last day. Happens every 2 months where there's a one-week period where you, when you buy any product, you get put into the sweepstakes each month for the new super off-road vehicle that our sponsor raffles off. Well, you got a chance still to get put in 50x every purchase you make, 50 times into the raffle, and you can win the Ford Raptor that's all souped up at $10,000 cash, plus the Ford F-250 diesel all souped up, $10,000 cash. So you can win both of those potentially, 50-time entries, and that ends on Friday at midnight. TheAlexJonesStore.com, TheAlexJonesStore.com. The widest selection of Patriot apparel, the very best supplements and more, and the new limited edition World War II trench knife. Stay with us. So I'm not giving up. I'm not going away. If they shut us down, I got the Alex Jones Network. I don't own. I'm going over there. You financed it. You paid for it. Your support. I'm just telling you, here's the weird paradox. I thought we'd be shut down last year. I thought we'd be shut down 2 months ago. The receiver won't let us order new product over at InfoWars.com. So we're in this paradox now where we're winning, and now they're like, well, you'll actually be open in the middle of next year now and all this stuff, and there's no money because people believe it was going to shut down. Plus, there's no product. But I convinced the receiver. I said, can we at least make fundraising posters, which are very low cost, have a high markup, people know it's an investment, to keep us on the air? Can I do that? I said, yeah, you can do that. I can just tell you, we need your support right now at InfoWarsStore.com. Three posters I designed, two I designed, Rob designed the other one. Defend the West, famous Crusader King, Make No Peace with Evil, say Crusader King, and then do like that still image of me. And it is the bestseller. It's I've only begun to fight John Paul Jones, and it's InfoWars 1997 to 2026. And yeah, you can buy Unsigned for $25, big posters, glossy in a tube, or you get them for $100. You're like, God, that's huge markup. Yeah, it's a fundraiser. Like when commies give NPR $200 for a ball cap, costs $15. That's the whole point. We're actually winning right now. I don't want to count chickens for their hats. It's not the Democrats. It's not the DOJ holdovers. They're going to shut us down. If you don't go get these posters and you don't support us, and I'm not bitching at you, I'm just telling you, I'm not saying you got to do it, then you will be the ones that shut us down. This is a marathon, so please support us, InfoWarsStore.com. I need the money right now. It's like in Star Trek, Wrath of Khan. He goes, I need warp speed in 3 minutes, we're all dead.
Scotty, I need warp speed in 3 minutes, or we're all dead.
And you guys have got us out of this over and over and over again. And me, I'm not giving up. We need to keep pushing because we've got their ass.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order.
It's Alex Jones.